The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We've got a lot to get to on today's program. We're currently working our way back to Edstone. We stayed the night here at a hotel just south of London. And today we're going to be viewing the Queen's collection of the Leonardo da Vinci drawings in London. The Royal Collection will be on display all summer at Buckingham Palace to commemorate the 500th anniversary of da Vinci's death. So we're excited to see those drawings. This exhibit brings together, I think, 200 of the drawings of da Vinci. It's all part of the Royal Collection. And according to the website that's advertising this exhibition, it says it brings together more of his work, or I guess the largest exhibition of Leonardo's work in over 65 years. So as I've told you a few times on the radio, there's all kinds of exhibitions and commemorations of da Vinci's work. And so we're excited to see that today. And also, it'll be my first time visiting Buckingham Palace, so we're excited about that as well. And then we'll make our way back to Edstone later on this evening. The other thing that's exciting about today's show, if you look at the iTunes downloads, or if you go over to the website, kpcg.fm, you'll notice that we have 999 shows posted. So that makes today's broadcast number 1,000 programs. I'm not sure how many I've done specifically, but I'm sure we've had at least a couple hundred that have been put together by our wonderful substitutes. In any event, this is quite a milestone to get to our 1,000th show. And as part of the, I guess, the special celebration, if you could call it that today, we're going to be getting some feedback from some of our listeners in France and Belgium. This will be a real treat. We'll reserve this, excuse me, for the last part of the program. We spent the Sabbath in Paris with just a small group of Philadelphia Church of God members, eight of them in an apartment, and we joined them, the five of us. So we had a nice little group of 13 people. And then the next day on Pentecost, that would be yesterday, we drove 90 minutes north of Paris to a nice hotel very close to Peronne. And we met, or six brethren from Belgium joined us. So I think we had 14 plus our five. So that made for 19 people to observe the Feast of Pentecost. And what we did after services is we had all of the group together, and I was able to ask them a few questions, and we recorded it. And then Parker also was able to go around individually to a few people during fellowship. So so we've got about 15 minutes of a montage we've put together that you'll really be excited to hear. So I'd encourage you to listen all the way through to the end of today's program for that special treat that just works out perfectly as a nice little treat for the 1,000th show. I wanted to start the program with some listener feedback. This one comes in response to the book club videos that we've been posting on the website. I think we had 8 or 9 videos about the Napoleon book by Andrew Roberts. And this listener says, I wanted to let you know how much I thoroughly enjoyed your book club series on Napoleon. As I don't have time to read the book along with you, I found that I have gained a much deeper understanding of Napoleon and related subjects that I would have otherwise missed out on. history really is a great teacher. And the older I get, the more I'm seeing this, and the more I regret hating history when I was in school. Can you please advise whether your latest club on Da Vinci will be posted on video, as I would love to get into that subject as well. Thanks again for all the great work, and it's great to see all the students and faculty giving input as well. So that's someone who enjoyed the discussions that we had regarding Napoleon. Some of those videos were more, I guess, lecture-oriented, but a lot of them were, we opened it up for quite a lot of discussion as well, and it made for some lively back-and-forth commentary that this listener here says that he very much appreciated. As far as Da Vinci goes, we did have one meeting, which we did not record, and then that was sort of a preparatory discussion prior to the commencement for Armstrong College, which we did post as a Trumpet Daily video. So outside of that, though, we're not going to be able to post several videos on the Da Vinci reading like we did with Napoleon, and with my family heading back to headquarters in Oklahoma for the next 3 or 4 months. We probably won't resume the video recordings of our book club until we get back into the fall semester a few months down the road. So hopefully we can resume that as soon as possible. Well, speaking of Da Vinci, we spent Friday afternoon at the Louvre in Paris. And that structure, by the way, of course, that museum is full of all kinds of famous works of art and sculptures and such, paintings, of course. But the structure itself is equally impressive. It's an architectural wonder, really, that dates back to the 12th century. So this is a building that's 800 years old or so. And over the centuries, it's served as a fortress, a royal palace. And of course, today, it's probably the most famous museum in the world. And we got to see some of Da Vinci's paintings, which was a real thrill. And I'll come to that here in just a second. The one disappointment from our visit is that we weren't able to see the coronation of Napoleon, this massive painting by Jacques-Louis David. That's Napoleon's official painter. He painted this scene in 1807. And in fact, you can go to page 117 in the Holy Roman Empire booklet, or the Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy booklet, and see a picture of that famous painting. And we weren't able to get into the room to see this massive painting because of remodeling. So that was the only disappointment. There were quite a few other paintings having to do with Napoleon and his empire from the early 1800s. But of course, the real thrill in this visit was to see those Leonardo da Vinci paintings. And I've spoken in recent weeks about just the level of curiosity that this man had. And this is something that my father has commented on before as well, going back to his early years in the ministry when he was recording some of his thoughts, the meditation tapes, some of us call them. But he said in one of those segments that great minds seem to all have one common trait among them. They seem to have an interest in everything, and not only a passing interest, he said, but an intense interest in just about everything. I think that's a common trait of all great minds. And you certainly see it in Leonardo da Vinci. Now, he had personal failings. When you look at his personal life, there's a lot that you don't care to get into or study. But when you look at some of his strengths, what a passion he had for learning. He never did receive a formal university education. He did, I think, study at the feet of a few mentors. But really, this remarkable education that he received over the course of his life, it sprung from the fact that he was interested in everything. There's one biographer who said that Da Vinci was the most relentlessly curious man who ever lived. He just had this insatiable hunger for knowledge, and knowledge that spread across many different fields of discipline. He saw himself more as an engineer and an architect than he did a painter. In fact, he submitted a job application. Walter Isaacson brings this out in his biography. He submitted a job application to this duke or this powerful leader at the time, and basically listed off all the things that he could do. And then at the end, it was sort of an add-on that, oh, I can also paint. But that's how talented this individual was. He was a theatrical producer, a stage manager, an engineer, an architect, as I said, a costume designer, a botanist, a geologist, a cartographer. He did everything. He had a lot in his writings and his drawings about the human anatomy, and for animals too. He dissected 30 human bodies over the course of his life. And his notebooks are just filled with drawings of human anatomy. We're hoping to see some of that in the Queen's collection later on today. But it was the same with animals. Before sculpting a horse, he wanted to dissect a horse because he had to see it inside and out. This was a man who was obsessed with God's creation. He just wanted to see it. He wanted to see the grand sweeping panorama. And he wanted to see it up close under the microscope. It says in Leonardo da Vinci, A Life in Drawing, this is the commemorative work produced here in Britain for the Queen's collection. It says that Leonardo used his drawings to think on paper, to devise new compositions, to fix impressions, to force himself to look in minute detail, to test his understanding, to explore every possible variant of a scenario. It says Leonardo's drawings also, or rather, his drawings allow us to enter one of the greatest minds in history with the directness that no other medium allows. I just thought that what's fascinating about that quote is that he forced himself to look at things in minute detail. He had to force himself to be this observant, to pay attention to every single detail. He was quoted as saying, details make perfection, and perfection is not a detail, but taken together. He spent years and years on some of his works of art. He was also known for not finishing quite a few of his projects, something I think all of us can relate to. But though he was such a perfectionist, though, I think that's why he maybe set some projects aside, because if it wasn't perfect, he would lose interest. Of course, there's a lot of spiritual parallels that we can draw from this. Jesus said, "Become you therefore perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect." God is reproducing himself. He's reproducing perfection. So we have to, spiritually speaking, we have to aim high. My father said years ago that there are no accidental masterpieces. There's nothing accidental about what God is producing. He's a perfectionist. And if he's going to reproduce himself in us, we're going to have to fall in love with learning and understanding and growing. We're going to have to get excited about the detail of God's marvelous creation. Joel Hilliker wrote an article a few years ago on the subject of God's law, and he said God imbued his physical creation with intricate perfection. While the broad view of a wider landscape is beautiful, there is far more to appreciate in even the minutest, most microscopic study. Every new discovery further reveals divine artistry and perfection. And then he says, the same is true of God's law. The more you study it, the more beauty and perfection you see. Look through the microscope at it, and your appreciation will grow. Study in detail. Look through the microscope at God's law. Look through the microscope at God's purpose. Look through the microscope at God's creation. And the more that you do, the more your appreciation of God and His power, His awesome power and might, the more that will grow. Leonardo da Vinci, he started his Mona Lisa work, that masterpiece, in 1503, and he continued working on it for the next 14 years. He had that little painting tucked under his elbow at times as he'd move from place to place. It was a work in progress. He never was quite satisfied with it. He wanted to make it absolutely perfect. It says in a National Geographic piece from a couple of years ago, "The Mona Lisa's smile is the culmination of a lifetime spent studying art, science, optics, and every other possible field that he could apply his curiosity to, including understanding the universe and how we fit into it. It's the culmination of a lifetime spent studying art, studying science, optics, every possible field that he could get into, all those dissections, to understand about the smile of a woman, to know about the tendons and the muscles underneath the skin." Walter Isaacson, in his book, he says, "And what about all of the scholars and critics over the years who despaired that Leonardo squandered too much time immersed in studying optics and anatomy and the patterns of the cosmos?" He says, "The Mona Lisa answers them with a smile." Scholars, you see, look at his works. I think there's something like 20 paintings in existence, and they think, well, if he just wouldn't have gotten distracted on all of these other fields and just would have concentrated on painting, maybe we would have 40 or 50 or 60 paintings instead of just 20. Well, Isaacson, I think, puts it well. He says the Mona Lisa answers those scholars with a smile. Appreciate, in other words, appreciate the perfection of what we do have, of what has been preserved. We saw 4 paintings of Da Vinci at the Louvre. The first, of course, Mona Lisa. That's the one that people come from all over the world to see. And it was a fantastic experience to see it, but not the most enjoyable. There is so, it's in one big room, and you line up basically. It's not even really a line. It's just it's kind of like a funnel, and everyone crowds into this funnel that works its way toward the point that can view the painting from about, I don't know, 10 or 12 feet away, so you can't even really get up that close to it. And so here's all these people crammed together in this tight space, just moving, inching forward, and then people would get to the very front where they would then take their pictures or their selfies or what, and then the front line would then eventually stand there for 30 seconds or 40 seconds, and then these ushers would open the rope that kept you away from the painting and let the front line exit to the left, and then everybody else would inch forward. And so you just did this for, I think, about 20 or 30 minutes. And then you'd get to the front and take your picture and move on. It's a famous painting. It's the most famous painting in the world. We probably enjoyed looking at the other 3 by Da Vinci. In the Louvre, you have Mona Lisa, you have John the Baptist, Saint Anne, and then Virgin of the Rocks. Which there's actually 2 versions of this painting with some unique differences. The other copy of it, or the other version of it, is here in London at the National Gallery. Hopefully we can get over to see that at some point as well. But just the detail and the beauty, even though it's, in a lot of cases, some of his paintings are based upon Christian scenes that aren't really very Christian. But the detail in the background, and then the detail in the foreground, and then the way that he painted human beings, a true genius, masterpieces, so many of them, more than just the Mona Lisa. I think the other thing that stands out about Da Vinci is that he was, humanly speaking, he was a deep thinker. He didn't understand God's truth, God's purpose or plan, but he was a deep thinker. Isaacson, in the biography, said that his quest for knowledge across all the disciplines of arts and sciences helped him to see patterns. And he looked for these patterns in nature. He looked for similarities or analogies that could be made in God's creation. He compared veins and arteries to the flow of rivers or the movement of currents of air. On one page from his notebooks, he has this drawing of the human heart and its main arteries alongside a sprouting seed. And he writes alongside these drawings, "The heart is the nut which generates the tree of the veins." And so that's a small sampling of what you'll see in his notebooks. Him making these comparisons, drawing these analogies and so on. Isaacson says in his book, his comparisons between man-made machinery and the handiwork of nature produced in him a deep reverence for the latter. He really did develop a deep reverence for God's creation, for God's handiwork. It's interesting that Isaacson uses that word handiwork, because that's the way it's presented in Psalm 19. We'll look at that a little bit later if we have time. But Isaacson says, "Though human ingenuity may make various inventions, it will never devise an invention more beautiful, more simple, more direct than does nature, because in her inventions nothing is lacking and nothing is superfluous." There's nothing lacking in God's creation, in the human body, for example. There's nothing superfluous or unnecessary. When I read that quote from Isaacson's book, I immediately thought of Psalm 139 and verse 14, a verse that we read often in our Principles of Living class. Mr. Armstrong refers to it in The Missing Dimension in Sex, about the creation of the human body. "I will praise you," it says in Psalm 139, "for I am fearfully and wonderfully made." David wrote this, "Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows right well." David said, "I'm fearfully and wonderfully made." What a machine. What a mechanism. In The Missing Dimension in Sex, Mr. Armstrong says, "But the largest, most complicated machines man has designed pale to insignificance beside the most wonderful of all mechanisms, the human mind and body." He says, "This awe-inspiring mechanism also was formed from matter out of the ground. It was the supreme masterpiece of God's great creative handiwork. The Almighty formed man after his own likeness, and his spiritual creation is still in process." So even the physical, it's a wonderful mechanism. But then when you think about the spiritual creation going on, even now, what a masterpiece. God said in Genesis 1, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him, male and female created he them. So God made us male and female from the very beginning. He created the sex system in human beings, in the male in the female. He designed the human body in a marvelous and wonderful way, and Da Vinci got to see that on the inside way back in the 1500s as he was dissecting these human bodies to see this fearfully and wonderfully made system, this creation of God. You look at Genesis 1 at the end of that chapter, verse 31, it says, "And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day." So God looked at his creation, his recreation of the surface of the earth, and then the creation of human beings. And he looked at that and said, "Wow, this is really good." Now, as Mr. Armstrong taught us, it was unfinished. There's still work to be done. It's still a work in progress. It's like God has the Mona Lisa tucked underneath his arm. He's continually working on it, and if we're compliant, if we yield to his will, then we're becoming more and more like God. We're learning to think like God, day in and day out. What a wonderful creation, and what it teaches us about God. It's magnificent. Psalm 19:1 says, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork." There's that word, handiwork. They declare a message. You can look at the wide panoramic view, staring up into the heavens. It says in the Gospels, "Lift up your eyes." Well, Isaiah said the same thing. Look up, see God's handiwork, see his creation. But then you can zoom in on the minutest of detail and also see his glory. And you can discover patterns, and you can draw analogies as well. You can meditate on the greatness, on the creative genius of Almighty God. Verse 2 in the Revised Standard, it says, "Day to day pours forth speech, and night to night declares knowledge." There's a message there. It declares a message from God. Verse 3 says, "There's no speech nor language where their voice is not heard." Here's this unspoken message, but it comes through loud and clear if you have eyes to see, if you have ears to hear. And look at the technology that we can make use of that Da Vinci never was able to use. I thought it was we've been using Google and the internet for quite a number of years now. But as I was reading Walter Isaacson's biography on Da Vinci, it was really helpful because I don't know much about art and what's famous and why it's famous. But anyway, he would explain, well, this was what Da Vinci was doing in his life at the time that he painted such and such. And so I'd bring up on Google, as I was reading it, I'd have my computer there and I'd bring up this painting and it would give a little bit of background on it. In the case of Mona Lisa, Isaacson said, get on Google and look for the high resolution copy that you can zoom in on so that you can see the detail, so that you can see perfection, so that you can see why it's a masterpiece. That's what God wants us to do with his truth, with his inspired truth, with his divine purpose and plan, as it's revealed in the Holy Bible. Verse 7 in this same psalm, Psalm 19, it says, "The law of the Eternal is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Eternal is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Eternal is pure, enlightening the eyes." It says, "The fear of the Eternal is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether." See, all of this harmony, this unity that you see in God's creation, that you see in the universe, that you see, now there's lots of work to be done there. Romans 8 brings this out. The universe is groaning in travail. It's waiting for the birth of the first fruits. But still, you look at the harmony. You look at the perfect seat that we have in the universe, right here on Earth, what we can see and looking up into the heavens, and how that those heavens declare the glory of God. And then you consider that creation chapter or recreation chapter of the Bible, Genesis 1. So much beauty, so much detail, so much that reveals the handiwork of God in Mystery of the Ages. Mr. Armstrong said about human life, he said it's at once of infinitesimally less value than they suppose, the scholars and the people of today at university or wherever. Human life is at once of infinitesimally less value than they suppose, and at the same time of supremely greater potential than they know. He says, what is the real truth concerning human worth? What is the real value of a human life? He says, it's grossly overestimated in its own reality and astoundingly undervalued in its supreme potential. The truth, indeed, is staggering. The incredible human potential. See, as he brings out in that quote, scholars and human beings today, we look at our human life and we want to be vain and puffed up in our thinking because of our human existence. And Mr. Armstrong saying, if only we knew the truth about human worth, it's the potential that we want to be thinking about. This human life, it's just a staging ground. And it's a fast-moving experience, life in the flesh at that. It's like vapor. It's like mist coming off from the water. It's a blade of grass, it says in the Bible. So temporary. It's the spiritual creation that's going on. The masterpiece. The handiwork of God that we want to wrap our minds around. Ephesians 2:8 says, For by grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourselves, it is the gift of God. Verse 9 says, not of works, lest any man should boast, for we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus, unto good works, which God has before ordained that we should walk in them. So we're created to be instruments of God, God's workmanship, God's reproducing his character, his nature, his perfection in us. And that's why we yield to the truth of God, to the laws of God, to the purpose of God. In the old correspondence course, it says, few people seem to know that the Bible is actually the Maker's instruction book to the mankind he designed, created, and made. It says it's the guidebook instructing us how to live, how to use this most wonderful mechanism ever produced to secure the intended results of happiness, joy, peace, security, freedom from fears and worries, good, vibrant, energetic health, perfection of righteous spiritual character, and finally, eternal life in the kingdom of God. Yet almost no one uses this very word of God for its intended purpose. Few people understand this. The Bible is the Maker's instruction book. He sends it along with his creation. There's books, I don't know how many there are on Da Vinci, probably hundreds. And there's books about how to think like Da Vinci. Even at the end of Walter Isaacson's book, the final chapter, I think he has 20 or 25 points about how you can think like Leonardo da Vinci. There's a book that goes by that very title from, I think, 15, 20 years ago. How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci. They look at his notebooks, they look at his drawings, they look at his paintings, and they think, wow. And then they know a little bit about his life and how curious he was, this insatiable hunger he had for knowledge and understanding. And they think, well, I want to emulate that. I want to think like him. I want to be that hungry. But they're not going to think that way when it comes to God himself. God reproducing himself. this wonderful and fearfully made mechanism that is the human body and mind. And here God sends along the instruction book. And if we use it, we can understand how to live and know how to use this most wonderful mechanism ever produced to secure the intended results of happiness and joy, of peace and security, freedom from fears and worries, as Mr. Armstrong wrote, how to lead a life of good, vibrant, energetic health, and how to build holy and righteous and perfect character. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we're going to conclude today's program with a real treat, as you'll get to meet some of our wonderful brethren and supporters and listeners from France and Belgium. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Untold thousands of professing Christian ministers have, over the centuries, preached Christ. They have professed to be His ministers, to represent Him. They have said Jesus of Nazareth is the Christ, but they have withheld Christ's gospel. Thus, the vast majority of people on earth have been deceived by false gospels. The incredible human potential reveals how men were deceived about the truth of the gospel, and it makes plain what the good news of the true gospel really is. The true gospel of God's coming kingdom is directly concerned with world conditions as they are, with human nature, its source and origin, with world evils, suffering, unhappiness, with world peace. It's concerned with government, with the reason present human governments fail to be the benefactors of their peoples they are supposed to be. This all-important subject is thoroughly explained in Herbert Armstrong's book, The Incredible Human Potential. Request The Incredible Human Potential today. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
Bonjour et vive la meilleure émission.
All right, we are with the French brethren here in the heart of France, just observing the Feast of Pentecost, and we're going to have our lovely translator tell us what all of you just said in unison.
We just said hi and congratulations for the thousands of the radio show.
The thousandth episode of the Trumpet Daily radio show, and we have some Trumpet Daily listeners here, although they're maybe not regular listeners, because many of them speak mostly French, very little English, but they're very enthusiastic supporters of God's work. And they want all of our listeners, all of our Trumpet Daily listeners, to know that they're enthusiastically supporting the work. What would you say to some of our listeners from Canada or Australia or the Philippines or the United States? Anyone want to send them personal greetings or tell them a little bit about the work in France or Belgium?
I don't know.
Il dit, est-ce qu'on aurait des choses à dire aux auditeurs d'autres pays, d'Australie, du Canada, concernant l'œuvre?
Bonjour et tenir bon pour faire l'œuvre.
So it means hi and to hold fast for the work.
Great.
We hope to follow us for the 1,000 edition for the trumpet.
What was that exactly?
So I meant, yeah. So he says that we hope to be able to listen to that 1,000th episode.
Go. And you said yesterday.
This is Sebastian, and you said yesterday that there have been a couple of episodes where you listened to them late into the night because they were so enjoyable.
Oui, en effet, j'ai écouté deux épisodes que j'ai mis en favori et je les ai écoutés gentiment très tard dans la nuit.
So he recorded two shows and then he listened to them very late in the night, yes. Which he really liked.
Yes. So most of you speak mostly French. So what you have the French website. Tell us a little bit about the content that you can access on the French website or with the translation process, just basically how you're fed spiritually from week to week.
We like to watch the Key of David.
Okay, Key of David.
And the small in 90 seconds, explaining.
The Key of David, going back to that, you have that translated. There's a voiceover, and who translates that?
Paul Fontenoy.
Paul Fontenoy, right here.
I'm just the voice. It's not me who translates.
No, you have a wonderful voice. You have a wonderful singing voice.
Thank you.
That translates well into a good speaking voice.
The voice of...
The voice of French.
Oh, French, yes.
Of David.
Yes.
Yes, Paul Fontenoy, he does the translation weekly. And so you have the Key of David. And then the other thing that he mentioned was...
That he likes.
No, he said he's actually the voice of the emissions.
Okay,
yes.
Oh, the 90-second video.
And he said also regarding 90-second videos, this
right.
is what he enjoys.
Right. And then yesterday, I don't know if it was Sebastian who mentioned that there's maybe 26 booklets that are now translated. What booklets are you anxious to see translated into French?
Quelle est la brochure que vous avez vraiment envie d'avoir en traduction en français?
How to pray.
How to pray.
The throne.
The new throne.
The new throne of David, yes.
L'histoire de l'Église. L'histoire de l'Église.
Story of the true
church. The history of the true church. Hopefully they're listening to us and the editorial department or the FLT department in Edstone or Edmond. Any other requests for literature to be translated?
And also translate it in Dutch.
Okay, we also needed to do it in Dutch. Mr. Klaus wants it in Dutch. Okay, that's a good one. Yeah. Tell me about the Trumpet magazine. You don't get a printed copy of the magazine, but you do have a French website. And how does that work? What kinds of articles do you see on there?
Alors, on n'a plus la trompette en version imprimée, mais on a le site web. Quel genre d'article vous lisez dessus? Qu'est-ce que vous allez voir?
Articles.
Tout ce que je peux.
All the articles.
Yeah. Everything they can read.
Yes, everything on the internet you can take on internet.
Right.
Every article from Mr. Armstrong.
So they translate articles from the English website and then post it on the French website.
Yeah.
Do you get a lot of newsy articles, or are they more Christian living, or both?
C'est plutôt des articles sur la vie chrétienne ou c'est sur les nouvelles?
Un peu tout,
The politics.
Politics and
the politics.
And the religion.
And religion.
Yes. Together.
And sometimes someone was mentioning at lunch, it's a little bit challenging to keep up with American politics and American history because you're so French-centric in your understanding.
No, very difficult.
So is it frustrating?
Yes.
A little bit?
The politics in the USA is not easy.
The politics in US, is difficult to understand because we don't know the history of the states and the government, the law, and
I'm sure Americans would say the same about some of the themes that are covered more in European sources. In any event, leave that aside. There's one common theme or connection in all of us: God's work, God's church, God's spirit. Yeah. So we really do thank you for being such wonderful supports to what God is doing in this end time, and really for just being so steadfast and committed, in some cases for decades. We were talking to the few in Paris yesterday the lovely couple married 50 years. Been in the church going back to the 1960s. How many of you have been in the church, speaking of the church, the PCG and the Worldwide Church of God, going back to the 1980s, let's say?
Depuis les années 80 à peu près.
1967. The Le Mans.
67.
And you came in 1960. You were married in 69.
Yes.
The Le Mans have their 50-year anniversary, marriage anniversary, coming up in August, and I say to you, congratulations.
J'ai pas compris.
Il dit voilà, vous allez fêter votre 50e anniversaire et donc il vous dit félicitations.
Merci. Thank you.
Merci beaucoup.
Oh, yes. You have the accent. They tell me I have the three or four French words that I know. They tell me that I have a French accent, so that gives me some strong motivation to study the French language.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Any last comments? Most of you are staying here at Edstone, or you're going to Edstone for the feast.
Yes.
So what do you want? What do you tell people that you want to meet? You tell them what? Come to Edstone for the feast?
Yes.
Yes, because the campus there is very beautiful, and it's not of course the headquarters, but it feels like God is there. You can feel some peace, and it's very beautiful.
Well, I would second that. We've lived there for 4.5 years. It's a wonderful place. The feast site there, I think it accommodates maybe 200 to 300 people. Most of our European brethren go there. Not all of them, but most of you do go to Edstone, or when we had it in Ireland. So, for those of you listening around the world, you've got some European brethren here that would love to meet you. Any other questions? Love? My wife's filming it in the background. Well, you've been great. It's been a wonderful Pentecost weekend. Thanks for your love and hospitality. Thanks for your encouragement. And stay strong.
Thank you for your work here in the region. We really enjoyed it.
You hope to see you soon.
We hope to see you soon again. Bonjour.
Oh, nice.
So there you have it from the group in France and Belgium. And now we'll hand it over to Parker for some individual chats.
So for helping with the translating to hear the comments from the local members here in France and Belgium, we have Miss Corinne, and she's doing a lot of translating work for us today, and she usually does all kinds of translation work for the work itself. Would you like to tell us just briefly about that?
Yes, so I've been translating for almost 20 years now. At some point, we had some translators coming from Canada, and there was 1 year where we were not sure there would be any translator. And as I was able to understand quite a lot, I offered the help to the ministry. I said, I understand quite a lot, and I have the impression we won't have any translator, so I can give my help. I can try. And they said, no, don't worry, this year we'll have something ready. And the following year, finally, we didn't have any translator. We knew in advance, so I did some preparation during the summer, and then it was it, the first time. And it has been like this for almost 20 years now, translating sermons, sermonettes, Bible studies.
Well, Miss Corinne will be helping me with all the translating throughout this segment here, and we'll catch a few comments with her. Okay, Jeremy, well, this is going for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and we would like to ask you today, what is your favorite thing to do on your spare time?
Et là, on voudrait te poser la question, qu'est-ce que tu aimes faire le plus quand tu as du temps?
Alors, des plus plus.
Des plus plus.
Je vais vous montrer. Allez, je fais plus.
Et quoi d'autre?
Des Lego.
So he likes to make plus plus, he's going to explain, and also he likes Lego.
Des constructions très dures.
So So he likes to make intricate constructions.
Like what?
Une maison que je fais par moi-même, mes plans.
So he builds a house and he's doing the plans himself of the house.
That's really cool. That's great. So how many of those have you done?
Ça, c'est génial. Et t'en as fait combien comme ça?
15.
15 houses.
Way to go. Think you have a future in that?
Ça fait beaucoup de maisons.
C'est impressionnant, hein? Et c'est quoi l'avenir pour toi?
He says yes. Thumbs up. Yes. Sounds good, Jeremy. So how long have you been in the PCG, attending the PCG, Miss Stephanie?
En fait, depuis 1995, 1995, but I left for 10 years. I go back in 2013 and be baptized at Nuspeed this year.
And she was baptized this year just before Passover.
Wonderful. That's congratulations. Awesome. That's great to hear. God's family is growing even here in France, everywhere around the world, in Belgium, France. Yeah, so you guys normally meet up on the holy days, and is that about it?
Surtout, avant on se voyait plus, maintenant c'est surtout pendant les jours de fête. Et c'est chouette.
In the past, we were meeting quite often, but now it's mainly during the feast days, and she said that's awesome.
Sure. So, if you would like to give us your name and how long you've been attending.
My name is Joël de Haren. My husband is with me, is Mark de Haren. I am in the church, Philadelphia Church, in 92.
92. And how about the WCG before?
I went to the WCG in 86.
86. That was when you first began attending?
Yes. I stay in the Worldwide Church, but I had the opportunity to receive Malachi's message. But in French Canadian, I read the message and I left the Worldwide Church, go to the Philadelphia.
Malachi's message was the first booklet you read. Yes. Wonderful. Well, glad you're here and I hope you're having a fantastic Pentecost.
Donc, c'est magnifique et il vous souhaite une très bonne journée de la Pentecôte.
And for you too.
Thank you. Thank you for contributing.
Yes, we have a very good message received by Mr. Stéphane Fleury about the reason why we are called to do our work and to be teacher. And it's very important to remember each one of you, even as a student, because you have to learn for one day to teach. And it's very important. Yes.
Okay, so I just wanted to add that Mr. Hope, who is a minister, who is doing a lot of translation for the French-speaking people, and he has been a very, very big help for us. So we share the burden of translating. So I thank you, Mr. Hope, a lot for that.
So there you have it. There's the comments from our brethren in Belgium and France. The ones we met with over Pentecost weekend just yesterday, some very excited and enthusiastic and happy people who've been supporting the work of God's church for, in some cases, for many decades. So we'd like to hear more feedback coming from you. As you know, you can write to the program by sending an email to td@kpcg.fm. But as you can hear there from that montage, it's wonderful to hear it in your own voice. And if you'd like to submit some audio to the program, don't forget about that audio tab on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show page. You just go to that page at the trumpet.com website, scroll down just a little bit, and you'll come to the big, I think it's an orange tab that says Start Recording, and you can submit your feedback. Today, you're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thank you for joining us on today's 1,000th episode, and we'll see you again tomorrow.